4 seconds left in this third overtime. The game is tied at 109.
The shooter gets the ball. No one's pressing. No one's blocking. He aims. He shoots. He scores! Wow! They won the game! The shooter was all alone. Had all the time in the world. Was the defense taking a nap or what?
Where is the defense? Oh, my goodness.
When there's no defense, it's game over. The same happens with your teeth when enamel is weak. New Pronamel Active Shield Toothpaste strengthens your enamel because strong enamel is the best defense against cavities. New Pronamel Active Shield. Here's the defense.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Butler in the corner with 1 second. Hoist the jumper. It's good!
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Your Fighting Tigers are national champions.
I'm too hood. I'm too ghetto. Y'all told me that all year. But when other people do it, y'all don't say nothing.
Honestly, I have no idea. I was just trying to get to the handshake line.
Earlier on the show, Kansas State guard Marquise Noel, 49ers tight end George Kittle. Coming up, Academy Award winner Matt Damon. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, hey, everybody. Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. What a great first 2 hours that we've had. Great chats with Marquise Noel of Kansas State basketball. He thinks UConn has the edge tonight. And is the 34th, my gosh, anniversary of Michigan cutting down the nets against Seton Hall. Brian Dutcher was an assistant on Steve Fisher's staff on that night. He can cut down the nets tonight against UConn, which... to just tell you how crazy things are. That was a Big East team back when Steve Fisher's Wolverines cut down the nets against Seton Hall. Look at that photograph. Put that up one more time, Hoskins.
See that?
No. Susie's favorite guest, Brent Musburger, interviewing Steve Fisher at the moment.
I'm here.
In that CBS Sports blazer.
Rich, Big East will never die.
34 years ago tonight.
Rich, think about what you said earlier about this. Do you feel like Steve Fisher in today's world does not get the credit that he probably deserves for what he did?
And he'll be there tonight. He'll stroll down memory lane tonight. And it would be huge for San Diego State, obviously. Anybody wins tonight. Matt Damon's going to be joining us in about 20 minutes' time. Air is in theaters near you on Wednesday. Great chat with Matt Damon upcoming right here on the show. We already also spoke to George Kittle, who surprised everybody at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
There are some perfect guests in the world, and she's always a perfect guest. But coming off of the women's national championship game yesterday, and we're in the middle of pro day circuits. It's the draft month. And so who better to talk about both than somebody who was with NFL Network and me and the rest of the crew for the Combine? She was at Will Levis's Pro Day on that front. And also, in terms of talking about the national championship game, she played in one. It was the first time Oklahoma had ever made the Final Four when she helped lead them there. Her number 21 is hanging in the rafters currently at the Lloyd Noble Center in Norman, Oklahoma. Third overall pick of the 2002 WNBA draft, who also happens to be just a great human. This just in, she's from Canada. Stacey Dale is back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Stacey?
Hey,
what's up, Rich? Hey, guys. Great to be with you.
Hey, Stacey.
What's going
on? I mean, I thought I'd bring some Canadian heat to the conversation.
All right. So let's just jump right into it, Stacey. I'll give you the dealer's choice. You want to talk about the way the game was played or the way what happened towards the end of the game with Angel Reese? Which one is, you know, leaps out to you more from yesterday?
Yeah, as a former player, Rich, it's the way the game was officiated. I mean, I love what, you know, we can jump on Twitter and go down the rabbit hole and see everybody's takes. I love that. You know, when these young women go to the WNBA, I hope they would be on my team. I mean, Angel Reese is phenomenal. She's a double-double machine. Caitlin Clark, the best player in the country for a reason. Like, it's insane how good they are. And I would hope either one of them would be on my team and do what they did. And whether they're, you know, flashing fingers in front of their faces or, you know, getting the crowd involved, you want to see it. I love it. The officiating for me was the issue.
So it just seemed to me, just from jump, it was all, there was tons of whistles. I'm wondering what you were thinking as you were watching this game unfold and the fouls started piling up on all the stars in this game.
I'm literally shocked. And I tweeted that, Rich. I mean, listen, as a former player who has played in this game and knows what it takes to get to this game, to see your best players, like I'm tuning in not only as a fan of women's basketball and somebody who played it, but to see these superstars, like to watch Angel Reese sit on the bench because she gets two fouls in the first quarter is insane to me. And the second one, she made a great basketball play, deflects the ball off of an Iowa player, and it's possession up for LSU. For Caitlin Clark to get three fouls in the first half of this basketball game, and listen, so if I'm an official, and I was a captain, Rich, on pretty much every team I played on, mm-hmm. whether it was in college or the WNBA, you want to have conversations with officials. And if it wasn't involving me and it was a teammate, I'm walking over, I'm saying, listen, what do we need to do better here? How can we improve this? My coach is doing the same thing. For Lisa Bluter, the coach of Iowa, to come out after the game, I thought quite eloquently and say, like, we couldn't have a conversation with these three officials was so shocking to me in such a huge, momentous game. We have more eyeballs than we ever have on women's basketball because of how good the basketball is and these superstars that are in the making. And I haven't even got into the technical foul. To me, I've always been a player. I always was a player, Rich. Mm-hmm. And if I don't play now, so I can say these things. Like, if I was still playing in the WNBA, I ain't coming on your show and saying this.
Right.
Because these officials are reffing at the professional level as well. And, you know, Lisa Jones is a very good official. She was on this crew. She's very communicative on the floor, super even keel. She didn't actually make the technical foul call in the third quarter on Caitlin Clark. It was Spurlock Welsh, I believe. I think to say her first name is Pilani.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know where to start. If you team me up better, maybe I can get myself there. But
well, it just struck me the explanation after the game didn't make sense, yeah. Based on, you know, the rule that they were enforcing because there was already a delay of game penalty. It's just like, why are we doing this? Like, what are we doing here? Like, yeah. This is the championship on the line, Stacey, you know? And again, like, I understand both teams had foul trouble and I guess you got to call it when you see it. I mean, we've had this conversation at the Super Bowl, coming off the Super Bowl, as you know, with James Bradbury. Do you call it when you see it? We had that San Diego State free throws towards the end of its Elite Eight contest, and their winner to make the Final Four. Do you make that call? Do you not? I understand you got to call it the way you see it, but good Lord. That's my tee up, I guess, on it.
We're
talking
about discretionary calls. So I texted with a couple of officials that are active officials, basketball officials right now as soon as it happened.
Uh-huh.
Not a chance in hell they're making that technical foul call. Unless it's egregiously insulting or there is some sort of intentional physical violation with players or staff members, or like you're talking about my mama or something like that, you're not making that call. This is a discretionary decision. So I'll take it a step further, right? So Lisa Jones, I believe, was the head official, so she made the statement to justify the call, right? She referenced, I believe it was Rule 10, Section 12 in the rules book. The article is 3K, Rich.
Sure.
So Rule 10, if you go actually look at NCAA rules, Rule 10 is fouls and penalties. When you go specifically to Section 12, it is technical fouls. So they go to Section 12 and they cite basically that she didn't immediately pass the ball to the nearest official after the whistle was blown after the warning 6 minutes previous.
Right.
So the previous warning was at around the 7:30 mark in the third quarter, because I'm sitting here watching. I'm like, why would they give them a warning? This is ridiculous. So with just about a minute left in the third quarter, we're talking about a 9-point championship basketball game. Right, the momentum has swung a little bit. Now LSU was the better team. I thought they should have won the game. Right, Iowa had the best player in the country. LSU had a better team. I thought they would win it. They did. But if you want to go down this rabbit hole, Rich, then you better go down, scroll down the rule book about 10 more lines to Article 4, and you know where I'm going with this, which is bench technical foul.
Okay? Well, I mean, somebody's got to be on the bench, I guess, as opposed to on the floor. Is that where you're going on this front with Kim Mulkey?
Bench. Stacey? Now, listen, Kim Mulkey's a very animated coach she always has been. I played against her when I was at Oklahoma and she was at Baylor. And she's always been that way. A lot of coaches coach that way. She's very animated, colorful, enigmatic. I mean, there's so many ways to describe her style on the sidelines. But if you're going down the rule book rabbit hole, then you've got to be consistent in that. And bench technical fouls under Article 4, the subheading is the head coach is responsible for the conduct and behavior of all bench personnel. Now, jump on Twitter and tell me you can't see Kim Mulkey make contact with an official, or, you know, use some sort of body language to basically suggest that the officials are incorrect. There are a dozen under that, under Section 4A, there are a dozen different incriminating ways in which the bench can get a technical foul. So my point being, I don't want technical fouls. I don't want coaches to get them. I don't want players to get them for dropping a basketball. When this official made that call, Rich, you go back and look, he was 10 feet away from Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Okay, so Caitlin Clark drops the ball behind her, which, by the way, spin back into the field of play if you actually watch it. She drops it to the baseline. She gets in the huddle with her team, who has just had its second-best scorer in Monica Sinano get her fourth foul. Okay? Now you've got your two best players, your two top scorers with four fouls. Listen, I'd rather see Caitlin Clark go up and make a basketball play to get her fourth foul and clobber somebody than in a, you know, in a non-intentional way, but clobber somebody to get that fourth foul, then give them a discretionary technical foul, which absolutely, even though LSU was going to win, destroyed the momentum of this basketball game with a minute to go in the third quarter in a 9-point scoring game.
Yeah,
I was blown away.
Stacey Dale's here on the Rich Eisen Show. So just to revisit again the way that everything ended, do you think there? And I'll tee up on this. Do you think there's a double standard between women and men with the competitive level? That you know that again, Joe Burrow pointed to his ring finger. You know.
I do.
Right. So I'll give you the floor on that. I mean, go for it, Stacey.
I cover the NFL. I mean, I'm standing down there watching these men play a violent sport. And if you don't think emotions are coming out, I played against Diana Taurasi. She's the greatest competitor I've ever played against because she had that moxie. She has that moxie. She's still playing. Like, you can't play at the highest level if you don't have some it factor. So, you know, to say that, you know, this stuff at the end of the game, like, why should we see women do this at 20 years old? Come on, people. It's 2023. This is really good basketball, great basketball, and let them play the game. I love it. I want to tune in to see it. And as far as the discretion between the men's and women's game, yeah. You don't think there's trash talking going on and taunting going on all the time in both realms? You're foolish. Like, this, it's real. It's good. It's competitive. And when you're in the heat of the game, it happens.
Stacey Dales, and before you just give a quick conversation about the NFL, you fouled out of your national championship game 2002 against UConn. You got fouled out in that game.
Yeah, I did, and it, you know, you'll never forget it. Like, you don't forget it, and it has nothing to do with my feelings on this particular 37 foul call game, which was a title game record.
Right.
But yeah, I did, and two of the calls, I could honestly say, Rich, they were hogwash, and like, you never want that to decide a game. Connecticut was supposed to beat us. I don't know if we're going to see a team like that ever again, with Sue and Diana and Swin and all the greats that they had. They were amazing. They should have beat us and beat us good. But if I'm in the game, we still, you know, we're a good team. I was a decent basketball player.
Yes.
Like, you know, one of the calls in particular was a spin move to the baseline with a left-handed layup in which I got called for the charging call on a player that was coming across the lane trying to defend me. It was an and one, and it got sent the other way. It was a game-defining moment. Like, you don't forget those things, and I just hate to see a championship game like we saw yesterday in any way be involved in official determinations. I don't think the ultimate outcome of the game was, Rich, but I think to see Angel Reese on the bench in the first half and Caitlin Clark, not okay for me.
Is hogwash a four-letter word in Canada, Stacey?
It's a polar polite way of saying other words that I could say.
Okay, very good. Before I let you go, you are all over the pro day circuit. You're all over the field for the combine. You hear way more than you report because you are a lead pipe wielding professional. Who do you believe the Carolina Panthers have traded all the way up to one to go get Stacey Dales?
Yeah, I think C.J. Stroud, Rich. I mean, I was at Will Levis's pro day. I saw the way they interacted with him. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of showmanship and smoke and mirrors at this time of year, as you know. Let's not be naive to that. But I think the Carolina Panthers to send, really for every quarterback, Bryce Young included, Anthony Richardson, Levis, and Stroud. And let's not forget Hendon Hooker, right?
Right.
To send, you know, an entire onslaught of, we're talking like 10 high-ranking officials, coaches, staff members to every one of these days. They know these guys inside and out. I just think Stroud brings the size maybe they're looking for in addition to the pocket presence. If I know Frank Reich well, the head coach, in studying him over the years, based upon the reaction I saw at C.J. Stroud's pro day, I think it was pretty magnetic. But listen, we'll see. You know, Bryce Young doesn't have a lot of error-type things in plays in college. And, you know, it's interesting to talk to people and have them say, like, scouts around the league when I'm at these pro days, you know, Bryce Young's workout was solid. C.J. Stroud's workout was solid. Very mistake-free, but you're getting that. Didn't have a lot of batted balls, and that's another thing from the college game that I didn't hear a lot about Bryce Young, right? Despite the size concerns and the criticisms. My dogs are going crazy.
I love it. Stacey, yeah. You know, you're a dog. You might love dogs more than everything else on planet Earth. I understand that about you as well.
Yeah.
So give me your favorite Anthony Richardson story that you've picked up over the last few weeks. Because he could be that number one in that nobody sees coming, you know?
Yeah. Besides the athleticism, the prowess, the physical specimen he is. I mean, he looks like a linebacker. I would just say the person he is. Getting to talk to him individually, one-on-one, Rich. He is an absolute delight. The fact that he raised his younger brother, basically, with his mom, and, you know, they bounced around and didn't have money, and his story, as he told me about his childhood, and then to become the man he is and really be not just a brother, but almost a father figure to his younger brother, who I believe is 7 years younger. You know, it's kind of stuff that when you're standing with somebody, you get tears in your eyes, and then you know what a team is getting in the NFL. I cannot wait to see where he gets drafted because they're getting a great one.
Stacey, you're the best. Thanks for the time. You know, it's always a delight chatting with you. Let's maybe have you back on before the draft. We'll talk more about what's coming up in Kansas City, and thanks for your thoughts on what happened in Dallas yesterday. Appreciate it.
Love to. Thanks for having me, Rich.
The one and only Stacey Dales, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. That's what's called a perfect guest for the moment.
Perfect.
The first Monday here in April. Let's take a break. Matt Damon, the man who plays Sonny Vaccaro, signing Michael Jordan in the movie Air. Can't wait to chat with him or show you what we've talked about coming up. Hiring for your business can feel harder than hitting a half-court shot with a 7-footer in your face. But thanks to Indeed, hiring top talent just got top-tier easy. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like matching, assessments, and virtual interviews. If you hate waiting, who doesn't? Indeed's U.S. data shows over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. Indeed knows when you're growing your business, you've got to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. Visit Indeed.com/richpodcast to start hiring now. Find top talent fast. Go to Indeed.com/richpodcast. Indeed.com/richpodcast. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. After years of getting ripped off by big wireless providers, there's finally a better option. Mint Mobile is the affordable premium wireless service that you can buy online, starting at just $15 a month. By cutting out retail stores, Mint Mobile got rid of the crazy overhead costs, so you could score sweet savings every month. To get your new wireless phone plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/switch. That's mintmobile.com/switch. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, sitting here on the Roku channel feed as well. We're live, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. This weekend on the Roku channel, we had the Rich Eisen Show March to the Max special. We had Sonny Vaccaro in studio, and we had Ben Affleck on a Zoom. He's directing the film Air, based on Sonny Vaccaro signing Michael Jordan to a game-changing for Michael and Nike and everybody else contract to Nike. The man who plays Sonny Vaccaro is Matt Damon. We chatted with him. This was all on our March to the Max special, and we are giving you the full conversation right here. Here's Matt Damon on our program.
Joining me here now is the star of Air, and you can catch it in theaters on Wednesday, April the 5th. He is the man who plays Sonny Vaccaro, who closes the deal in Air. Spoiler alert, they get Jordan. Matt Damon joining me here on the Rich Eisen Show. Good to see you, Matt.
Good to see you, Rich.
It's an incredible movie. Congratulations. It's really special, brother.
Thanks. Congrats. Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, we're really happy with it. It kind of fell in our laps less than a year ago, actually. I think we called Amazon about it in early April, and we were shooting it by June. And you know, it was finished, you know, by the end of the year. And we've just been kind of waiting to roll out with it. It's such a great story, you know, and it's kind of our vintage. I just remember, you know, Jordan and what that meant to everybody. So there's all this stuff about this story that I didn't know that I found really interesting. And it's just one of those scripts that every time I read it, I would be like, oh, I'm here for an hour and a half now because I'm not going to put this down. I just go through the whole thing because it really is a fun story.
Well, the movie felt like it lasted 5 minutes. I mean, that's how I felt. And then also, you know, the sign of a good, I don't even want to call it a sports movie, but a sign of a good sports movie is where you clearly know the ending and you're still on the edge of your seat. I know, as I said at the top, spoiler alert, they signed Jordan.
Yeah.
I knew this was going to happen, but I was on the edge of my seat about how it was going to happen. I really love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's just the script. It did a really good job of, you know, that's what I mean about not being able to put it down. It really was a gripping story. And sometimes movies can do that. You know, we all know the boat sinks in Titanic, but we all sat all the way through that one too, you know?
Well, I was going to go like we knew they win the Miracle on Ice in Miracle. You know, you know what I mean? But I was on the edge of my seat to see how that was actually going to play out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and look, I mean, the other side to this was Ben went down and sat with MJ because we really needed his blessing. Like if he said, look, guys, don't touch this, please. We wouldn't have done the movie. I mean, the direction that he gave us, which is kind of amazing coming out of that meeting, were a few things. He said George Raveling was the first person he heard about Nike from and was in his ear about it. And Howard White, who neither of those characters were in the script that we read.
Huh.
And then the final thing that he said was he talked really, you know, Ben was really moved by the way he talked about his mother. And how, what an impact and what a powerful force she was in his life and through this time. You know, what a heady thing to be 21 years old and trying to negotiate. I mean, it's just, imagine what a lot of these athletes have to contend with. They're making these really consequential decisions about the rest of their lives. And Michael said to Ben at one point, you know, he goes, I would have done the whole thing for the car. You know, because in the movie, there's this thing, he wants a red Mercedes and his mother just knows better. She goes like, I'll make a deal for the Mercedes. It's going to be forgotten next year, you know, but what we need is this, you know, and so it just becomes this incredible story about his mother. And it was in that meeting that Ben asked him, you know, who, you know, if I could, you know, if you could choose who to play your mother. And before he finished the sentence, Michael said, Viola Davis.
He did.
So Ben called me. He goes, yeah. So Michael really gave us not Ben came out of that meeting going, okay, I got great news and I got bad news. I go, okay, well, give me the great news. He goes, I know exactly what the movie is and what to do. He goes, I'm going to call Chris Tucker because we wanted to work with Chris forever.
Okay.
And Chris is going, we're going to bring him on. Chris is also a great writer, so he can help us build this character. And he goes, I said, what's the bad news? He said, we got to get Viola Davis or we can't make the movie. And I was like, you got to get Viola Davis, dude. That's like saying you want Michael Jordan on your basketball team. You know what I mean? Like, she's an American treasure. But we spent about a month, I guess, just rewriting and working on the screenplay and really trying to, you know, we had done that before with Good Will Hunting. We really wrote a part that we knew we couldn't get the movie made without a movie star. And so that Robin Williams part, we used to call it the Harvey Keitel part, because in Reservoir Dogs, we had heard very famously that that movie got made because Harvey Keitel said yes. Mm-hmm. And so we said, we need a Harvey Keitel part because we need somebody to get this movie greenlit because they're not going to do it for us. And so it kind of was back to the drawing board for us. It's like, all right, we gotta make a character that's worthy of, you know, our country's best actress. So that was what we kind of set about doing. And thankfully she said yes. And she's obviously incredible in the movie.
So did Ben or did you tell her you were the handpicked choice of Michael Jordan to play his mother? Was she aware of
that? I think Ben told her that. She says she doesn't remember that because I think she blocked it out. She said it was too much responsibility. Yeah,
that's Viola Davis. Too much response. That is amazing.
I know. It's like, she's so brilliant in the movie too. She's just great and just great to work with. And, you know, and actually we had this wonderful thing, which was her husband, Julius Tenen, is a great actor. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're big heavyweight, you know, they produce The Woman King together. They're kind of, you know, they're Hollywood heavy hitters, you know, they're royalty. But Ben cast Julius as James, as Dolores's husband, Michael's father, James. And he said, you're not going to believe this. He goes, not only is Julius the best actor for the part, he goes, because they're married, no matter what they show up with that day, it's going to be right. He's like, if they're in the middle of a fight, if they're in the middle, you know what I mean? It's like, if he didn't take the trash out that morning, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's going to be, there's so much, and they're able to just, you feel them as a couple in the movie. It's really pretty great.
You know, and it's pretty cool, Matt, too, that you see this movie and it's kind of perfectly timed. I know I'm changing sports here. But the whole conversation about Lamar Jackson right now is that his mother is his agent. And the way it's portrayed, you know, in the sports media, it's kind of like, you know, Will Ferrell in the basement screaming for the meatloaf, you know, in Wedding Crashers.
Right,
but
you
see here, though, that Michael's mother makes one of the most key sports decisions in this film, or sports business decisions in this film, of, you know, the latter part of the 20th century. And I don't think I'm overstating it right here.
I don't think you can overstate it, you know, and she understood what her son's value was. And look, I mean, I think it's a very unsung role in a lot of these athletes' lives are the mothers. In fact, the original ending of the movie, Ben had over the credits, you know, there, I don't want to give too much away. There is, you know, you see MJ, you know, and all his brilliance in the towards the end of the movie and all the footage that we've all seen, but you see a speech of his over the credits. But Ben had originally he had found, when we were researching, so many speeches of these athletes when they're given an award, they start to talk about their mothers. Oh, and it was one after another. You know, the famous one with Kevin Durant, Dwayne Wade, all these amazing athletes who really, really kind of, you know, they put their mother in the central, you know, narrative of their lives, because they say, this is why I am here. I would never have been here without her. And so I'm glad the movie is that, you know, I think it pays homage to that central role in a lot of people's lives, a lot of athletes' lives.
Did you always think you were playing Sonny Vaccaro in this when you were reading the script? Did you always think that you were doing that?
You know, Ben got the script and I was like, who do you want me to play? You know, you want me to play Phil? Do you want me to play Sonny? Do you want, you know, what do you want to do? And I think he went, you know, he was directing it. So that is a lot of work, as you know. And so he took he gave me the bigger acting job and took the supporting role because he had his hands so full as a director. It's also hard to direct yourself. You know, you really end up relying. I've done it, you know, with Clooney a couple times and that with Ben. You really need to rely on the people you're performing with to kind of, you know, tell you that you're, you know, to give you notes and say, you know, hey, do less, do more. No, it's working. It's tough to direct yourself.
I'm chatting with Sonny Vaccaro for this show, Matt. And,
great.
And I saw the photos of you standing there on the set as him, with him. What's your favorite Sonny Vaccaro story that you got?
Well, I think he's such a lovely guy. I don't know how well you know him. He is just such a lovely guy. And what's so clear is how much he cares about the players, how much he loves the game. Like, he really deeply loves the game, but really loves the players too. And in this time, this era, you know, because kind of after this whole deal was put together, the whole thing kind of descended kind of famously into acrimony and people were fired and they, you know, and left the company, you know, and what Sonny really said to me, again and again, I think it was kind of the thing he really wanted me to understand, was that this time, the time that this movie is about was really a joyful time for everybody, for all of them. He was like, we were all friends. Like, they knew they were at this company that, you know, Nike was a weird company in the sense that, you know, they had these rules and they had these, you know, it's like live off the land. You know, they had all these kind of crazy rules, but that now seem commonplace in companies, right? They all have mission statements and all, but like Nike was, it really was meaningful. And that came from Phil Knight you know, they were outsiders and they were rebels a little bit. You know, and that was one of the fun things about looking back at 1984. I didn't remember that Nike was the third place shoe. Like, I of course remember the Converse weapon and Larry and Magic and all those commercials. But it was just right then that this deal got put together, and it just revolutionized everything. The way ads were, I mean, everything. It was just so huge. And these guys all, like, talking to Sonny about it, I mean, he's justifiably really proud that he was a part of this. And, you know, when we, you know, we didn't work with Nike during the movie. We didn't talk to them because we didn't want it to be, you know, it's not a commercial for Nike, and we didn't want that association. You know, I mean, it's very kind to Nike, I would say, overall. And like, so the last thing we wanted is to be accused of doing a 2-hour commercial, because that's not why we made the movie. But when eventually Ben talked to Phil, funnily enough, Phil said the same thing after. He said, we were all friends. You know, it's kind of like these guys are in their 80s now. And you wonder about that. And it really, Ben and I talked a lot after. It's like holding grudges, right? And you know, kind of, you know, Rob Strasser passed away a few years after this all happened, and he had left and gone to Adidas, and, you know, it had been this great betrayal to Phil. And you know what I mean? It's kind of, then you get 30 years past it and you go, oh man, God, those were good times. And we were friends, and why, you know, it really made Ben and I, it steered us into a conversation about letting go of some of those old grudges.
Well, I mean, again, it's just, I know you have kids, I have kids, my kids want to wear, you know, Jordans, Air Jordans, Jordan 1s, because it goes with what they wear. I mean, and just seeing, I'm going to show this movie to them, you know, because they should know this is not a basketball movie. And obviously it's a story about relationships, just like all good movies are. But I mean, this is a seminal sports fashion statement. Like, this created a whole new way of people dressing, living, and obviously Jordan as well. And again, I don't denigrate when I say sports movie. I hope you understand that as well, because it's more than
I agree.
But in that respect too, a great sign of a sports movie is the soliloquy, the big moment, You know, Costner's had many of them in his career, and you got one in this one. I don't want to give it away too much, but you got, this is a bona fide, real deal, like, want to hit through, hit you through a wall type, you know, Pacino moments, every inches type thing here, man. And I'm wondering, when you saw that in the script, did that hit you when you saw that in the script, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it did. I thought it was a beautiful moment. And I, but I was like, well, it's gotta, you know, if that doesn't work, then we are sorely screwed if that thing doesn't work, because that's, the whole movie kind of leads up to that. And what it actually really depends on more than my performance is Michael Jordan, right? And people's own relationship with Michael Jordan, because it's the moment before, you know, just when this decision is made, it's this moment. And then he goes on to become, to really have this meaning that we talk about, and that, you know, that to put the meaning in the shoe, right? And those shoes are meaningful because of him, not because of, you know what I mean? It's really this once in a century athlete who just captured our hearts, really. Everybody's so much bigger than the game, you know.
Yeah,
I'm you know, from Boston. This was in the 80s. I mean, the Celtics were everything up here, and you know, the Celtics Lakers, that rivalry, and that was what basketball was, and our rivalry with Philly with the 76ers and Dr. J, like, and this guy just came along and transcended everybody became a Michael Jordan fan.
Well,
everybody,
I guess you wanted Air Jordan. You could also use the word wrecked it all. You know, I mean, you're a Celtic fan. I'm a Knicks fan. You know, again, I showed my daughter, she's 9. I showed her a YouTube video of the top 100 moments of Michael. Somebody created a top 100 moments of Jordan's career. And truly 1/10 of them was him ripping the Knicks' heart and showing it to them pumping. And you could even include beating Ewing in that 84 national championship game.
Oh, my.
Well.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
The number of times he stood in my way as a fan. And I still love him. That's what, what I mean? Like, you can't hate him. There's no hating Jordan, you know?
It's Howard White turned out to be friends with Chris Tucker, it turned out, fortuitously. So Chris got all these stories. Chris spent a lot of time with Howard, and Howard told him one story that Howard got really into cycling up in Portland, I guess. He was an avid bicyclist, and invited Jordan on a 20-mile bike ride. And Jordan demurred, turned him down. And like a year later, out of nowhere, invited Howard on a bike ride. Said, let's go for a bike. It's 20-25 miles, where, you know. And he absolutely smoked him on this bike ride. And it turned out, in true MJ fashion, he had put a bike in the training facility, and for a year had added that to his regimen, because if he was going to go biking with his friend, he was damn sure going to beat him. Yeah. And like that, you know, I heard stories about that, about ping pong, about, you know, yeah, you want to play ping pong? No thanks. A year later, hey, how about that ping pong game? And he's been taking lessons, right? And it's just, he was an absolute killer, you know, and it's what made him him, you know? I mean, he was built differently.
So, Matt, before I let you go, it's NCAA tournament time, big dance and all that. I know you're shooting a movie and you're promoting one at the same time. Did you fill out brackets? Do you fill out brackets?
I didn't, you know, I didn't do a bracket this year because I was so, it's one of those things where I'm in Boston right now and I'm shooting tonight. I get on a flight and sleep on the flight. Yeah. Land in LA and I work because I'm doing press.
Don't worry, you didn't miss anything. Your bracket would have been destroyed to smithereens. Like
I heard, I mean, all the number ones are out.
For the first time since 1979, no number ones made it to the Elite Eight. I mean, my bracket is, and I really haven't followed college basketball very much this year. And it was like throwing darts, and my dart missed every single board. It was awful.
Well, it kind of always is. I mean, didn't Warren Buffett offer that thing about, was it 10 years ago or something? And like,
perfect bracket. Yeah.
The perfect bracket. And it was so genius because everybody signed up for it because they were like, you know, because he offered like $1 billion or something. And,
yeah,
and
if
everybody
was
out. The whole country was out in the first round. Like nobody even made it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I can't imagine this year. I'm sure everyone's redoing their brackets.
Yeah, my bracket was so bad, Matt. If I was in that, I would have to have paid Warren Buffett money. That's how bad my bracket was. So don't worry.
Well, I think you did, because I think he got everybody on some email list by doing that, like very cleverly.
There you go. There you have it. So what's next for you and Ben? The story about when Brady created the TB12 system or something like that, or like his first ever avocado smoothie.
Do it. Yeah, he's got our number. We'll do anything with Tom.
Well, he's retired.
No, you know, we started this company, this studio, and so Air is our first movie, and I'm up here shooting the second one, and we've got this another sports movie, actually, an incredible story about Anthony Robles, who's the college wrestler who was born with one leg, who won the national title. I mean, that's another one where you know the ending, and it is just it's an amazing story. And so that's going into production soon. We're really excited about that one. Okay. So yeah, we're on the other side of the desk now, trying to be a little movie studio.
Well, first foray, amazing. It really is terrific, man. It was so much fun. You just dove straight into the pop culture of the 80s as well. Fun story, fun cast, fun script, fun. The whole thing was fun. Literally, like I said, lasted 5 minutes, Matt. So congrats on that.
That's how we felt about it. We really started the company in large part to make these movies that aren't getting made, the movies that we love, right? And like, this is that type of movie. It feels more like a 90s movie. You know, it's about the writing and the acting and the direction, and it's not, you know, there's nobody in spandex with capes and, you know, no worlds exploding. It's just the good old fashioned story. So that's what we're going to try to do, because I do think people miss those movies. I know I do. So we'll just, our whole thing is we got to make good movies or else we go out of business. So that's a fun thing for us to focus on.
Well, it just feels like as long as you don't get, you know, all-time goats demanding all-time goats portray his mother, at least you were able to thread that needle, man. I mean, that's like a half-court shot. You hit it. Nailed it.
Thank God for Viola, man. But believe me, honestly, we really weren't going to do the movie if she said no. We would have just said, well, would you like to do it next year? And we'll wait. And
right.
If you ever want to do the movie, we're here. You know, we'll be standing by because you know, it was that meaningful to him. And so it was that meaningful to the project.
It was great. Congrats, Matt. I hope to see you again soon. Hope we can do this again in person at some point. Congrats on the movie. And let's chat again soon, brother.
Thanks, Rich. Good to see you, man.
You got it. That's Matt Damon right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Everybody go see Air April 5th in theaters. It's a fun ride. Enjoy it right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
And my chat with Ben Affleck tomorrow and Sonny Vaccaro on Wednesday, and then the movie premieres on Wednesday. We're all over the movie. It's right up our alley. It should be. And I'm giving my two enthusiastic thumbs up. It should be right up yours. We'll take a break and finish up this program, set up the rest of the week, and how we're covering the national championship game tomorrow right here on The Rich Eisen Show. I just learned Discover credit cards do something pretty awesome. At the end of your first year, they automatically double all the cash back you've earned. That's right. Everything you've earned, doubled. All the cash back from eating at your favorite soup dumpling restaurant, doubled. All the cash back from that trip where you sort of learned to snowboard, also doubled. And the best part, you don't have to do anything ridiculous to get it. Nope. Discover does it automatically. Seriously, though, see terms and check it out for yourself at discover.com/match. Men, do you get distracted during the day thinking about your underarms sweating, itching, or emitting an odor? Do those thoughts keep you from showing care when it counts? New and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant with 72-hour sweat and odor protection and 1-quarter moisturizing cream helps you forget about your underarms so you can be present for the moments that matter. Don't let underarm insecurities keep you at arm's distance from the ones you care about. Buy new and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant wherever personal care products are sold. Back here on the radio side of things, we just played a clip from a previous program where Jeff Garland called into the show very upset that our Instagram account had Russell Wilson being acquired by the Bears. Jeff Garland, diehard Bears fan. By the way, I think the way that everything's played out with Russell Wilson's career and that Justin Fields is there, perhaps that gets you off the hook.
Maybe so.
For the April Fool's joke that you played on everybody who follows us on Instagram. And Jeff Garland was very angry about that.
But see, what people don't know is, you know, Jeff Garland called you, what, a minute before the show started. Normally you don't ever pick up your phone, but he was calling you and you looked and then you had this talk with him, and then you were like, yeah. Oh, boy.
And I said, call in later. That was on an actual, we were on the air on an April 1st. Yeah. But folks don't know, the TJ's undaunted. This is what happens when your Instagram account is run by a former producer of Punk'd. This is right up his alley. April Fool's is directly up TJ Jefferson's alley. So I'm walking around on Saturday, and my phone's blowing up from friends saying, Zeke to the Eagles, and I'm like, who's reporting that? And he goes, your Instagram site.
We are.
Now, did you doctor up an Eagles Nation? Did you doctor all this stuff up?
I didn't. What happened is my buddy Eric Weingrad, he's an Eagles fan, and he sends me a text message, and he goes, man, I can't believe this. This is crazy, and without any context. I'm like, what are you talking about? Then he sent me that picture, and he goes, I can't believe he really signed. And then he was like, oh, man, I'm an idiot. And I just saw it, and I laughed. I went, because I wasn't going to post anything.
Okay.
I was just like, I'll let it go this year. And then that happened. I'm like, well, I got to post
so this. So somebody else did it, and then you took it and threw it on Instagram?
He sent it to me thinking it was real. Okay. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, you got a bunch
of people utilizing our hard-earned reputation of being straight up and honest.
Well, we're also showing the people for the people.
You know. So we weren't the only ones to traffic in this sort of thing. Nah. Victor Wembanyama, the future first overall pick of this year's draft. You know how many teams have been tanking for this guy since day one, but not really tanking. There was an incredible video of him over the weekend where he's 7'5", right? Isn't he 7'5"?
He's like 7'14.
7'4", 7'4", 7'5", you know.
He's got 120-inch reach.
With a phone book, standing on a Parisian phone book.
Is that a thick phone book?
And he's dribbling between the legs to try and get a defender who's in his face off him at a 3-point line. Mm-hmm. And he gets, you know, he steps back, launches a three. It's short. He realizes it's short. And the reason why we know he realizes it's short is he follows it up and dunks in his own miss of a 3-point shot. Yeah. That's how incredible he is.
Amazing. I'm pretty sure in all the hours of basketball I've never seen him.
He had fun saying, you know, breaking, Victor Wembanyama will not declare for the NBA draft. He will play another season for Metropolitan 92. And he wrote back, yes, indeed. April Fools, all the way from France.
15.9 million views on that post.
Wow. How about this one? Do you give your approval on this one? The XFL St. Louis Battlehawks. Tweeting out that following a vote from XFL owners, the Battlehawks have been officially approved to relocate to the greater Los Angeles area.
Oh, wow.
St. Louis is a city known for its incredibly hardworking, passionate, and proud people. Bringing the XFL back to St. Louis this year will go down as one of the proudest moments in our league's history. This move isn't about whether we love St. Louis or its fans, but rather about what is best for the Battlehawks organization. Is this too close to the bone or what? What do you think? Well, they're, by the way, very successful in St. Louis.
Well, they apparently, this is like what the actual language was in the Rams announcing they're leaving for Los Angeles.
Oh, so they cut and pasted?
They cut and pasted and then changed the appropriate keywords.
Look, what do you think? Do you like it?
Fantastic.
Oh, you like it.
I do like it.
I'm all for messing with people's emotions a little bit.
But that.
Look, the Battlecats, they drew 38,000 fans in their first game.
They're doing really well.
So I don't know if I would have done that, man.
I think they're taking a shot at
the Rams.
Yeah.
I know that.
But nobody would have
playing seen. On the emotions of their, yeah. I mean.
I don't know.
Hashtag too soon.
I mean, it's funny. It is funny.
It's pretty funny. I mean, hey, look, the city of St. Louis got almost $1 billion from Stan.
I understand that.
You know what I mean, so.
I don't think they're still thinking about that cash.
We can make jokes. No.
Wow.
Well, that was really good.
April Fool's joke. Hashtag too soon. Thanks to our guests today, Marquise Noel, Stacy Dales, George Kittle, and Matt Damon will be on Tuesday's show. Jay Billis will break down tonight's national championship game. We're back to wrap up on the Roku channel in a sec.
It's WrestleMania season, and the Podcast Heat Network has you covered.
Woo! Podcast Heat has shows featuring many of your favorite wrestlers and personalities leading up to the Showcase of the Immortals.
The Showcase of the Immortals. And talking about the results afterwards.
And now it's not just WrestleMania being a day, it's a week. I don't know if there's anything quite like it in any other form of entertainment.
There's not.
Get into the WrestleMania spirit with the Podcast Heat Network.
Woo!
Wherever you listen.